Hello, and welcome to One Stop Co-op Shop, your one stop for board game news and reviews. This week, game designers Peter Gusis and Michael Kelly will review a cooperative game and have a related design discussion.
Buttons and bugs. They're buttons and they're bugs and they're tiny in my face.
Dude, for no reason. Hey, it's Peter and I'm here with Mike.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the One Stop Co-op Shop podcast. Let me correct that. The nominated for Golden Geek One Stop Co-op Shop podcast.
Yes, back-to-back years. You know, the only 2 years where we've only had one entry or actually had an entry, because it was Co-op Cast for the longest time in there, even though we had changed our name quite a while ago to One Stop Co-op Shop. Then, for some reason, they changed it, and they also put the YouTube channel in there, so there's two One Stop Co-op Shop entries. So last year is the first year we only had one entry under the correct name.
And we were runners up.
And we're runners up, yes. And this year, we were nominated again. So please go to Board Game Geek and vote for us. I will put the link in the show notes there. I do think you need a picture or whatever. So if you need some geek gold to buy a picture, DM me.
It's like a picture? Do you mean like a profile picture?
I think you need a profile picture to vote or something like that. Or I don't know.
Peter is bribing people with geek gold to vote for our podcast right now, everybody.
That's right. Well, you don't have to vote for us. You can vote for anybody you want, but I don't want people to not be able to vote. Certainly don't feel obligated to vote for us. If you like another podcast more than us, vote for them, please.
Hey, vote for Beyond Solitaire. They were the runner-up with us last year, and I've been on that podcast, and Liz is awesome.
Yep, and Liz has been on our podcast quite a few times as well. We love Liz. Yep, solo co-op wonderfulness.
Solo co-op wonderfulness.
It's a colo revolution.
I still don't know what that means. Is that my colon? Is that
no colo like colo. Co-op and low player like solo
everybody. All right, and that's our podcast episode. Yeah.
Nice. No. We are going to be covering buttons and bugs this week, and we are going to have a design discussion on miniaturizing your game.
Yeah, and to be clear, that is Gloomhaven Buttons and Bugs, if you didn't know what Buttons and Bugs is.
Oh, yes.
And it's the new's tiny version of Gloomhaven that came out recently.
How much is it? Like 10 bucks, 20 bucks?
I feel like it's 15 or something. I mean, it's not available in retail. Oh, maybe it is. $16. Looks like $20 MSRP.
MSRP.
So okay. Probably like 15 or 16 once it's in all the online shops. So cheap is what we're saying.
Yes. And we'll talk about value. Is it a cheap game or is it just an inexpensive game?
But hey, let's talk about cheap and or inexpensive. Or maybe very valuable for the stuff you get. You can become a patron at patreon.com/whatstop.
Nice.
How about that transition? We're cheap, everybody. So we have our patron, again, patreon.com/onestop. And we have exclusive videos over there, over 60. We have crossed the 60 video line. So if you join the patreon.com/onestop, depending on your pledge level, you can have up to 60 videos of mostly me and my voice, which already means you're probably less likely to join, but that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's a loss in value.
Yeah, we also have...
Although I was on some of them. So
yeah, that's true. Peter's been on some recent ones. In fact, Peter just did a bracket challenge of top adventure, like narrative games recently that was pretty fun. Peter had played at least half of them.
Yes. Well, and if you want to hear, like people always talk about how content creators don't bash on games. Oh, you listen to that, and I don't hold back.
Peter had some choice words for a few of those games. And then you also get early access to our videos, so you can see them often a week early. And then you get double entries in contests, like the Shelf Life contest, that by the time you hear this, will be done. But you can enter the next one.
Like every week, yeah, right?
Every month. Every week would be a little bit much.
I feel like.
Oh, I do call that often, but they don't know when or how many. That's our Patreon. And you can also subscribe to the podcast, leave a review, subscribe to the YouTube channel, go comment over there, join our Discord. Lots of ways to be involved. But Peter, what have you been playing recently?
So we played one game together, and it was a game that we reviewed on the podcast last week, or at least Jason reviewed on the podcast last week with one of our podcast listeners. So that was kind of cool. One of our Discord members. So there's a, uh, a reason, I guess, to join the Discord or at least to think about it. Maybe you too will be selected to come on the podcast and review a game with us. But apparently he had written a review on Primal, and it's one of his favorite games. And I will get the listener's name, because now I feel bad because I keep saying he. But anyway, so go listen to last week's podcast if you want to get Jason and our Discord members' thoughts on the game. But Mike, what are your thoughts on the game? Now, you have much better thoughts than I do, or at least much more coherent thoughts.
I've actually played it quite a bit, and you have not.
Yes, I've played it like 4 times, but like I feel like once a month for like you know, 4 months.
Well, and Peter only played a single game with the final version. They did send me a review copy. And yes, actually, as of the posting of this podcast, my video review should be up the same day. So if you want to hear a full review, and also, if you want to hear Jason's thoughts, you can listen to last week's podcast and watch my video review on the YouTube channel. But yeah, to summarize a bit, I won't like steal everything from my video, but Primal, big boss battler, but with some streamlined mechanics, like there's not as much movement. You're just moving around quadrants of these giant monsters. There's a campaign phase. It's pretty minimal. It's pretty quick. I don't think it would bother you much, Peter. I know you didn't really get to play that part of it, but the story is fine. It's sort of weird. I don't know. It didn't ignite my passion, but it was not also offensive. It was just kind of there. But the campaign definitely gets out of the way quickly, and you get to the boss battle stuff fast. And yeah, the boss battles, as I'll say in my review, are a mixed bag, and many people won't like them, is kind of the big takeaway. I tend to still enjoy them a lot. I think the card play can be great if you realize that you will often have down turns and building turns, or turns where you are focusing on preventing the boss from doing stuff and boosting other players and not doing as much yourself. And also, it has a lot of fiddly upkeep that I would compare to Sentinels of the Multiverse, is kind of the closest game that I've thought of, where, because like the boss will have up to 3 things that might trigger based on your actions, where they'll do stuff. But then they'll also have 2 or 3 or more like parallel objective and other cards that'll do things based on what you do. But then you might do stuff based on what you do and what cards you play and what like actions you take. So like you'll sometimes have turns where you'll play a card and then 3 things will happen in different areas of the board. And then you'll be like, oh, wait, OK, I'll play another card. And then 2 more things will happen in different areas of the board. So that's not necessarily a full negative. You know, I tend to be able to run those kind of things pretty smoothly, and I did not struggle too much with Primal. But it is, I think, a flashpoint that will push other people away from enjoying the game. And it does lead me, that combined with like kind of the lost turns, to say that this is a game I would mostly recommend for 1 to 2 players and maybe is best with solo. Because the downtime and like the management can be a little bit annoying. But Peter, you've played it on and off a few times. What were kind of your takeaways with what you've played?
All right. Well, let me first start with Nathaniel James. Sorry, Nathaniel, that I forgot your name. He is our Discord member that joined Jason. He had also done a written review of the game as well on Board Game Geek. So check it out over there. My thoughts were not very positive. To be fair, my thoughts have never been positive on this one. I feel like you and a lot of the Discord members were much more positive. I kind of felt like it's been fiddly all along. Now, even Jason and Nathaniel agree with that. Now, they say it gets better over time, and I just haven't given it enough plays. But you know the society we're in right now, where you're not going to play a game 10 times if it takes that long to figure out whether it's good or not, right? Like, so as a first impression, which is what mine is more than an actual review, I've had 4 first impressions, I guess, each time I played it. Like, I kind of like, yeah, there's some interesting stuff there, but it's just overall the package doesn't excite me. And I think it's what Mike talked about. It's all these little fiddly triggers and like, oh, I know when I play a red card that this is going to happen. But, you know, I don't want to have to know that. I don't want to have to memorize what's going to happen when a red thing happens. And certainly I don't want to be surprised by it the first time and it completely shuts down my turn, or like does something really bad that might lose me the game because I didn't know what that trigger was going to be. So yeah, I think it's a game about risk mitigation. I think it's puzzly. I think there are some fun card play in there, but there can be frustrating turns where you just do nothing, as Mike said. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, the cons outweigh the pros to me. Like, I think there is a good game in there somewhere. I just think it needed, I don't know if it's streamlining. I don't even know if that's the problem. Like, I didn't feel like it was overcomplicated. I just felt like it made some turns not fun. And by some, I mean way more than it should have.
What I do think it is and I didn't think about this during the preview that I did, but like, you know, hindsight, now I feel this way. I think it was a big blunder to make the first boss the one they chose. Because, Peter, you don't know this because you haven't played, but very few bosses use this particular effect where they put down fire. And when you get fire on your space, you can't play any more cards. So the first experience everyone's going to get in this game is forced turns where you waste your entire turn. Now, it is, I think Jerry mentioned this when we played, Peter, it is a quick way for the game to teach you, hey, positioning matters and knowing what they're going to do matters because you might lose your turn. But the thing is, a lot of bosses don't do that. And I don't know, I think they could have slowly onboarded you with those kind of lessons in a nicer way. Like the third boss I played back before I was doing my review, I played like, I got like halfway through the campaign. But the third boss I played had like a few fiddly things to keep track of, but you could always attack them from every direction and they didn't have anything that canceled your turn. Both the things that led to dead turns when we were playing. So I was like, oh, this would have been a way better first boss for like a nice experience in the game. You know what I mean? Like this would have made people feel...
I don't want people to think that that's the only thing that shuts down your turns. Jerry had many turns where he drew zero attack cards.
Sure.
Right? So like, it's not a dead turn, but it's a turn where you're literally like discarding a card to move and then playing two or three defensive cards to like not get hit as hard and then like moving on. So I do think there's still possibilities for dead turns, even if positioning wasn't as important and they didn't have the shutdown turns. I still think there would be things that would shut you down.
Yeah. Now, I will say Peter says he's not sure this is a good game. I think this is a fantastic game if you have the right mindset and the right group or you're playing solo.
I don't know that I think it's a bad game.
It's easily, I think, I mean, from all the stuff he said and how much he's played, I think it's easily Jason's probably number one or number two game of the year so far. It sounds like the guy that did the review with him that Peter was talking about, you said it was one of his top games, right, of this year or maybe all time. And I've heard that from other people in our Discord, too. And I really like it, too. It's not going to be a top game for me, but part of that is that I don't tend to be gravitating toward huge campaign games as much right now. You know, Peter doesn't like it. I don't think Jerry liked it very much. It's not going to be, like, top probably... I don't think it'll make my top 10 at the end of the year, but it might be top 20 for me. So it's good for me. It's amazing for other people, and it's a total flop for others. So big thing I would say, like we say for a lot of our things, like go watch Jason play a few of the bosses or go watch my old previews because the rules are basically the same. And you'll probably get a feel for like, man, that seems annoying or man, that seems awesome.
Yeah, I just think it's I don't think it's a bad game. I think the onboarding experience is tough. And look, Spirit Island's the same way. But I feel like Spirit Island at least gave you, like, it eased into it a little bit. I mean, that game's just so huge. Even removing a lot of stuff, Spirit Island I'm talking about, still makes it a very heavy game. I think that is a rough teach for players, too. And I'm actually surprised Spirit Island did as well as it did because of the onboarding experience with it.
But I think Spirit Island... with an easy spirit, especially like the lightning one that doesn't have slow actions, with no adversary, like playing solo on your own island, you know, like one board with none of the events or anything. I think that's actually a more streamlined, straightforward experience than Primal, I would argue. Just because Primal always requires you to, like, there is no minimum, like the boss is always pretty complicated. Even the easiest boss still has a decent amount of stuff going on. Gotcha. Where Spirit Island, the enemies just put dudes down. Like, yes, your card play is complicated, but I would say that the onboarding is worse for Primal, honestly.
Yeah, I think what you do on your turn, and I guess that's the difference between two games for me. What you do on your turn in Primal, like Jason, you know, they were talking about it last week, how interesting the card play was. I did not find it that interesting, right? It's like I play green and blue cards and I like, or whatever the colors are, and I like, you know, defend against this attack or whatever. And it's not even really defending against attack. It's like trying to get one to three of those cards down to like stop their like whatever quote unquote attack at the end of the turn. And then like you play red cards to attack them. And I don't know, there is some interesting combos in, as far as what order you go in. And then do you level those cards up or you just level your equipment?
So what happens is you unlock new cards and you also level your equipment up, and your equipment will change the numbers of colors you can have in your deck. But then you are just interchangeably building your deck. So the cards aren't necessarily better, although they often are. It's more like what combos do you want to make. And eventually you get new masteries, which are like the those cards that you build up tokens on and give, and like you had the one that let you keep on volleying and doing automatic damage every turn.
Yeah.
Change those up. So picking a different mastery and then building in cards that work with that mastery really turns it into a deck construction game in a way, like more Marvel Champions-ish or like one of the other Fantasy Flight LCG games. For better or worse, you know, I'm not saying that's a part you would love or not, but a lot of people are going to like it.
Yeah, no, I think I would like it more with leveling. And as you got higher up, again, I've played basic bosses, like, or not basic, but, you know, I've played starting level characters against the easiest level of boss multiple times. So I'm not saying it's a full on con. What I'm saying is it's a rough onboarding experience that can lead to frustrating moments. And certainly those outweighed the moments where I was like, oh, that was really cool what I just did. And I feel like I had a really cool character and I was able to do some cool stuff by the end of the game and we won. So it's not like, you know, this is like bitterness here or whatever. I just felt like the memorization stuff was frustrating. Yeah, I just felt there was like some frustrating stuff as well for me.
I think this is one of those games, Peter, that if you played it solo, because you've only played it three player, I think, yeah, number one, you would have an easier time memorizing the enemy cards because you'd be the one flipping and resolving all of them. We've talked about that before, yep, how like somebody else resolving the boss can sometimes make it hard to like track. And then also, yep, you don't feel like you have dead turns because, you know, if one character only plays a blue card and a yellow card and then moves on, that turn feels like no time passed when you get back to like a cool guy's turn, you know? So I do think it's best for solo, at least for me and you, for our tastes and what we like, gotcha, tend to gravitate toward.
Yeah, 15 minutes in.
I was going to say, this is not a prime overview. All right, well, I was going to mention things I've been playing. I'll just mention one. I've been playing Ironwood, which I played at PAX and raved about. It was one of my top games of the convention. It is a 1v1 skirmish, like kind of area control-ish, asymmetric faction game that's coming from Mindclash. And I got the preview copy. It's not like quite done, but it's almost 100% the same as like the main copy that'll be coming out. And I got to play solo, only one faction. They have solos for both factions. And it's really good. I'm not sure yet. It seems like the bot might have some like broken things you can kind of do to them. But I don't think the other bot will have that. And I don't think those things will apply if I ramp up the difficulty. Right now I'm playing on sort of like easy-ish mode. And looking at what they get with higher difficulties, I think it might take away some of the cheesy options I was doing. But the core, right, gameplay is great. The 1v1 gameplay is great. I'm, you know, to be determined, I will have videos, to be determined whether I will think the solo is great in the end. But so far, I'm enjoying the play. I'm just winning a little bit too easily, and I got to crank up the difficulty.
Oh, okay. Nice. The game I'm going to mention is Rats of Wistar, which is a secretive Nim-themed game, although it is very much a Euro game. But basically, your rats going around trying to gain control of this farm, and you are gaining power to power some of your cards. You are gaining resources as you're going around. It's really a worker placement game, but kind of on... It's not a rondelle, but you have this interlinking track where on the outside of the track are the basic actions, like gather wood or gather, I think metal might be the other one, and then, or like create an invention or draw some invention cards or whatever else. But on the inside are like bonus actions that go along with it, and they change every round as you like rotate this inner dial, but it not only changes the bonus actions you get with the action itself, but it changes the number of opportunities for players to get that action. So gaining wood might be three times on one turn, and only one player can do it on the following turn. So watching for what's coming up is actually interesting. I think there's a lot of interesting like Euro economic stuff, because when you're like taking these invention cards you get and you're building them in front of you, like I got a jetpack that let me like fly into the house, and like you're exploring the house, you're getting more mice with you, you're placing your mice around, and that'll help you like power the action more times, the basic action more times. So there was a lot of cool stuff going on, but there was also a lot of luck, like luck of the draw, what you get for these invention cards. Like there's very swingy as far as victory points and stuff like that. You could just luck into cards that work really well for you. So I think there was a lot of luck in a game that is very strategic, and like a lot of what you're doing is cool. And somebody described it as you accidentally block people and frustrate them very often in this game, because it's like, oh, if I can do this one action, I can get like 20 points. I got all these things lined up. But somebody, because they needed the same action, ends up taking it before you. It's not like they were trying to block you, but it just happens to be, no, I needed that bonus action with that. Any other action spots there wouldn't work to complete it. So you're doing a lot of work to build up to this thing for somebody then to just accidentally need the same action as you and block you. So that got a little frustrating as well at the end. So I think, again, I've only played it once, so this is just an impression. And it does not have solo mode, unfortunately. But I think it's a very good game. But I also think I need more plays to say whether the balance is off. But from players that had played it before, they had seen similar things. Like, I almost got doubled up on points. And I wasn't even the one frustrated. The guy in second to last was the guy that really got frustrated with the game. I was just having fun doing the actions, just experimenting with it. And I felt like I was doing good the whole time. That's the funny part about it. I can't look back. There was a 20-point swing turn on the last turn when somebody literally before me took the action that I needed. So, considering I had 43 points or something like that, and it could have been 63, and there was no other action that would let me literally complete what I needed to do at the end of the game, that part was a little frustrating.
Sounds like I better track this one down.
No, I think it's good, though. Like, the gameplay is really good. Like, that's that I'll say.
But I mean, anyway. You know how many games there are that are really good that aren't frustrating?
Yes.
Million.
Yes. Touche.
All right, but yeah, so that few games we've been playing, that was Primal the Awakening, the upcoming Ironwood. That one's not released yet. And then Rats of Wistar.
Yep.
And yeah, so that's the entire podcast. We have no time to talk about Gloomhaven, Buttons and Bugs. Sorry.
All right, let's do it quick. Buttons and Bugs. It is Gloomhaven miniaturized. You basically get shrunk on the first mission and you're trying to find a way to get full size again. You're not one of the Gloomhaven heroes. You're like a maybe local like adventurer at best. So you're not this big fighter like you are in Gloomhaven, but you're trying to do these little quests to get yourself full size again. There's the theme. Mike, talk about the mechanics.
Yeah, so the mechanics are basically Gloomhaven, but if you don't know what Gloomhaven is, it's dungeon crawler. You're moving your character around on this little card, which represents the board, moving around on hexes. There are also enemies that are moving, and you pick two cards from a hand of cards. You use the cards are split into two actions on top and bottom, generally attack on top, move on bottom, and you resolve one top action, one bottom action. So usually you move and attack, but things can change based on your character class. And based on initiative order, which comes from the cards, the enemies, you'll roll for what they do on their turn, and they'll also activate. And usually in most scenarios, you're trying to kill all the enemies before they kill you, or before you run out of cards and get exhausted. And yeah, that's that's Gloomhaven. And it's a campaign, but you can also play it one-off. You slowly unlock better skills and more items. But technically, you can jump into any mission and just like use the stuff they tell you to, and you're good to go.
Yep. All right. So we're going to talk about our top five things you need to know about the game, starting with number five, which is least important, going to number one, which is the most. And I'll start. My number five, which might be some people's number one, is the clever use of cards. And if it was Gloomhaven, it might be my number one. But we've seen this use of cards before. Basically, you are using the bottom of one card for, as Mike said, the bottom usually is a move. The top is usually an attack. But there are definitely lots of variants on that. They also, in the middle of the cards, they'll give you an initiative. And the thing that it does differently than Gloomhaven, or quote unquote more clever than Gloomhaven, is you're going to use the A side of the card when you first get it. And then after you use it, it immediately comes back to your hand on the B side. And once you use the B side, then you discard it. So you only have four cards at the beginning, but you get to use them twice. So it's similar to Gloomhaven's eight cards in hand, but you really only have a choice of four cards at a time. And you could use the A, once those B cards are in your hand, you could then use the A side of one card and the B side of another card. And again, you're discarding it if it's on the B side, and you're putting it back in your hand if it's on the A side. You will then rest, again, very similar to Gloomhaven, where you're going to discard one of those cards. Now, here's one thing that was different than Gloomhaven, is that when you get rid of a card, it's basically like you're getting rid of two cards in Gloomhaven, because you're losing both uses, both the A side use and the B side use. So your actions dramatically drop, as you play. It happens in Gloomhaven, but it's even more so here with Buttons and Bugs. So if you like that clever use of cards in Gloomhaven, I found it more interesting here because not only did I have to decide like which two actions I want to use, but almost like which back actions do I want to unlock? And also for those powers that are ongoing, which I had quite a few with the character that I chose as my main character, those actions, I had to decide when I wanted to kind of stop using them so I could unlock those back actions. And like, I was basically tying up two cards by keeping them locked. And so that was an interesting choice as well. That's my number five, the clever card play and the way they use the double-sidedness of them.
Yeah, and that will be higher on my list. Peter said it might be. It will be. My number five, which might be higher on Peter's list, is the accessibility of the game. Got some pros and cons here. On the pro side, if you haven't seen the box, it is tiny and it's very portable. I brought it to like to work and just played it on my desk for a little bit and it totally worked fine because I had like a free 20 minutes. You know, it's like 20 to 30 minutes maybe for each battle, even faster maybe if you're really quick at Gloomhaven. And everything in there is like quick to pull out. It's quick to set up. It doesn't take up too much space. It's a pretty streamlined version of like a little dungeon crawler combat game. And it's nice to have that kind of thing. It's very affordable once it's available. Like we said, the MSRP is going to be $20. Kind of crazy for what you get. On the negative side of the accessibility, when I first heard about this, I was like, oh, they're going to streamline Gloomhaven and simplify it in a lot of ways. And like they kind of sort of do because like you only have one hero, so you don't have to like deal with like enemies targeting different people and, you know, the maps are small and all that kind of stuff. But besides that, it's basically just Gloomhaven. Now, that's not really a negative for me. It probably wasn't a negative for you either, Peter, because because it's like, oh, it's just Gloomhaven. I've played this game in three other versions. I'm good to go for this. But if this is the weird thing, I thought this would be like, you want to play Gloomhaven? You never played before? Get Buttons and Bugs. I don't think I would say that. I would say get Jaws of the Lion.
Correct.
Which is like a $60 game, I think, at this point, because this one, I don't know who it's for. It's like, I think it's for,
I've got an idea who it's for, and that'll be my final thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of for us, but I guess we'll talk about that later. But yeah, like it only has a little learn to play book. It doesn't include like half the rules you actually need to learn the game. Then you got to scan a QR code and go read like a 30 or 40 page rule book. I'm like, it's a very weird ask if this is your first exposure to Gloomhaven.
And I will say about the rule book, the learn to play is good enough if you've played Gloomhaven enough. Although there are rules that just aren't in the learn to play rulebook. Like
lots terrain of rules.
terrain past the first battle. Yeah, good luck figuring that out. No,
yeah, you how to use to items in the campaign, how the campaign even progresses, like really basic stuff. They're like, well, you'll learn, like they literally want you to play the first scenario, which is super basic, and then read the whole entire rulebook. It's just weird, man.
They do have the Dized app, which is kind of cool, and it will basically walk you through your first turn, your first game. And the nice part about the Dized app is like it has you select which cards you're using, and it'll like tutorialize those cards. It'll tell you exactly like what you can do with that card. So I think it's D-I-Z-E-D, Dized app. That's how I actually learned the game the second time. I'd already played it at Gen Con, but I played it again and just use the tutorial system with the Dized app. It actually did a pretty good job of walking you through.
Okay. I hate apps like that, so I did not pay attention, but that's good to know. Well, yeah, long story short, it's really cool that it's a small form factor, but don't necessarily pick this up if you've never played Gloomhaven before. I think it's going to wallop you in the brain if you think you're getting like a light, like easily transportable, easy to digest game.
Yeah, I agree and don't agree with a lot of that, but that'll come out through the course of the review. I will say what I thought was most funny is they guide you to this like PDF rulebook, and literally it's a Word document. Like there's no pictures, there's no even background color, there's nothing. It's literally a prototype rulebook that you and I would make. It is the full rulebook for this game. Everything else is beautiful, but I did think the full rulebook was pretty hilarious considering it was literally just like a Word document. All right, my number four is mission variety, and this is both a pro and a con. So far, every mission I've gotten, and I've gotten probably halfway through the campaign, and again, it's short, so don't take that to be like, you know, I probably played six or seven missions, something like that. every mission I played so far has been kill all the minions. I don't know if that is the objective of every mission.
There's like, I want to say four, but some you won't see because they're like branching based on your class. There's like three or four that aren't kill all the minions. So it's definitely very much kill the minion heavy.
Yes, but I will say it does feel different because the maps, as little difference as there is in the maps, there is enough pushing in the game, and you even get an item pretty early on that helps you like push minions. So you're pushing them into traps, and each of those traps do like different stuff, give them different status effects. So I think the mission variety is actually pretty decent because the enemies feel pretty different too. It's almost like even if you didn't have a board, the minions would feel different to fight because they have different amount of armor and retaliation. Now, the range certainly helps with that variety, but I do feel like each mission I've played has been a unique puzzle, and I think it's even more pronounced if you're using different characters, which, by the way, we'll talk more about characters in the future, but you can easily, every mission tells you basically like what level you're playing, and there's like a clear path of like, if you're playing level three, use all your level three stuff, you can level up two cards, you can use this many equipment items, so it's pretty easy to just switch your character out in the course of a campaign. You don't have to use the same character. Certainly nowhere does it tell you you can do that. But there is no reason why you wouldn't be able to do that. So the mission variety is actually pretty decent considering its small form factor and everything else it has. I thought it was fun to play different missions. And it is, as Mike said, kind of branching because every character has its own unique story. So it looks like there's like 20 missions in the game, but there's not really, because like after mission two, it literally is like, if you're this character, do mission four. If you're not, do mission five.
Here, my point is basically the same thing as the campaign structure. Okay. What Peter just said is overselling it a little bit. You will play 15 missions and one of them will be unique to your class. That's it.
Yes, correct. Yep.
No, it's branching in the least, you know, it is a single branch one time based on your class.
Every character gets one branch, correct. Right?
Yeah. Every character gets one mission that is unique to them, and then everyone else plays. But that does mean that, you know, you'll see something new if you play through with a new character. Mine is pretty much the same as Peter's. I do want to comment on the story. It's well written and completely forgettable, which is how I feel about most Gloomhaven stories. Like that's wrong. I actually found this story slightly more interesting because the whole concept of you being shrunk down and trying to like explore this world, that is kind of cool. But still, I was very quickly like, whatever, like kind of skimming through the story pretty quickly. But yeah, I totally echo what Peter said. It is very samey in terms of the objectives, but the enemy variety and like where they start, like sometimes I would be like, oh man, that guy's really far away. I can kite him for like several turns while I deal with this person. Like there are like little fun tactical puzzles, and the enemies and like their random activation might change how that puzzle feels. And like Peter said, a different character is going to make a different, like if you have a lot of range for your character, it's going to feel like a very different mission than a lot of like melee, depending on the thing. So usually I'm really critical of campaign games that just like have the same objectives and stuff each time. I'm not being critical here, but I think it does feel different to fight these fights enough for me with such a small, inexpensive package. I thought that was pretty good. But yeah, the narrative's fine. The campaign is super linear, but since you can kind of jump in wherever and like replay and switch characters, I don't really mind it. So overall, close to a pro for me, but yeah, a little mixed.
All right. My number three is there are lots of unique characters in this game. I think it comes with six, right?
Yep.
The characters are very unique. They're actually similar. I think they all have analogs in Gloomhaven. Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know. They're straight from all the ones that I played, at least, were straight from Gloomhaven.
Okay.
Like original Gloomhaven, like the Mind Thief. Remember Jerry played him.
Yep.
I think I played the Brood originally. The Craghard. I was the Craghard in another campaign we played. And then, yeah, I think they're all from original Gloomhaven.
Yeah, but they do feel, I mean, just like in Gloomhaven, they feel very different from each other. And as you level up, you're leveling up one of those cards, which is kind of like leveling up two cards because you're leveling up the front and the back of those cards. And you get a new, we didn't really describe how the table works as far as like whether you hit and how much damage you do. So in regular Gloomhaven, you're drawing from a deck, which could have misses. It could have doublers. It could have plus one damage, plus two damage. The way they do it here is they have a chart. And so your cube starts at the top of this chart and you roll a fudge dice, and you're using this dice a lot. If you don't know fudge dice, it basically is plus on two sides, a minus on two sides, and a neutral don't change on two sides. That's how you control the enemy AI as well as this chart. And it tells you like, oh, you got plus this time, that's plus one damage, or it might be double your damage, or it might be plus two. Now you have an idea of what's coming, so you can see, and you do have items that let you like gain advantage, which means roll two dice and take the better of those. So obviously you want to save them for the rows that are more like variable, but that chart changes as you level up as well, kind of like you're leveling up your deck. So the level ups come pretty quickly as well, which makes me very happy. So I think the characters are each unique, and I think they level up in a pretty cool way. Now, the one negative for this for me is I did find, similar to Gloomhaven, maybe even more so here because you're only seeing four cards at a time, like my cards clearly paired together pretty well. Like card A or card one went with card two really well. So I almost always use those two in combination and in concert together. So that was my only, I guess, negative of this is, now situationally, I would certainly do things differently. But a lot of times I'd go, okay, I want to use this ability that'll help me trigger this ability. And just the way the cards work and the things they have on them, I think, at least for the couple characters I played, seemed to be that way for a lot of the characters as well. Again, because you're only seeing four cards at a time, so two tend to work together usually.
Yeah, unfortunately, my number three is also the characters. Maybe I'll do my number two after I say a few words.
Yes.
I echo pretty much everything Peter said. The one critique I would say, although I do think this is generally great, like it feels like you get a ton of variety in characters for, again, $20 MSRP. It's kind of crazy. The one negative I found compared to Big Daddy Gloomhaven and Frosthaven and such is that in those ones, you're really getting new action cards. And in this one, at least for many of the classes, you're getting better versions of the same card. It's like, hey, you know that range attack that hit two people? Now it hits three and it might do plus one damage. And that does feel cool. Don't get me wrong. I'm not like totally underselling it. But it did feel like your leveling up was a little bit more of like a parallel move instead of like an actual like cool new ability unlocked. You know, if you play Gloomhaven or some of the best dungeon crawlers, they'll, like in Gloomhaven, you actually like get, you unlock like a cool secret thing for your class halfway through, you know, and like you might even get like a new miniature to play with and like all kinds of crazy stuff. So there's none of that here. Now, that was not the case for every class. Like I played the Void Warden or whatever it is, like the mage one, and that one actually changed quite a bit. Like a card that had at level one been like a defensive card would like switch to being an offensive card at level two. So I thought that was cool. I just wish there had kind of been more of that, but it's also nice to have simple characters that level up straightforwardly. But yeah, so I thought that was great.
Well, I'm going to double down on that real quick before you move on. On the back of the character card, it says this card becomes this card and this card becomes this card. And I was like, oh, this is going to be really annoying. But no, very quickly, I laid the cards down. I'm like, oh, this one's clearly the upgrade for this, even though it's got a completely, like, backstab became like Assassin's Leap or something. But guess what? It was quite obvious which card that went with. I was like, and if I wasn't sure, I'm like, oh, this could be this or this. I flipped the card over. Sure enough, on the back side, it was like an upgraded version of that same action.
Yeah, and Void Warden is still fine with that because, like, the frost card stays a frost card and the flame card stays a flame card. So even though the effects are more different, like, it's still pretty obvious. The one thing Peter didn't mention, but I think was okay, I still kind of like it, is how the items work as you level up. Basically, it's kind of cool. The deck you're progressing through for the 20 cards, it reminds me a bit of Flame and Fang, Peter, is like, it's like a book and you're like just going through the cards, but every page you've turned, every card you've passed has items on it that you can equip. So like, as you go through, you just get more options for your items. You can equip two things in your hand and more like bag items as you go. And I thought it was neat because you can see like what the mission is and what the enemies are, and you know who your class is. So I would pick different items based on the mission. Like if, like Peter said, there's like the spring hammer that knocks him back really far. If I had like some awesome terrain in there I wanted to push with, I might take that. Or maybe I would take the one that gets rid of status effects because they have somebody who poisons you really quickly or makes you bleed or whatever. So yeah, I think that was pretty cool. Overall, awesome, like how well the characters work for the price. And my number two is also one you mentioned, Peter. It's the card play. And
okay.
Yeah, fortunately, we're very simpatico on this one. I agree that I think overall, I like the card play here better. I do like the limits of the A, B side thing. I like that some of that I need to play an A to get to a B that will then combo with something else. Like, I think that's just an interesting decision space. Now, it does... I think when you said, Peter, like certain combos, I feel like having the AB thing and fewer cards in your hand at a time almost exacerbates that potential issue a bit more, where I tend to be like using the same combos a lot. But even with like simple characters like the Brood, I still found myself not doing the exact same cards together every time. You know, it would vary based on like my positioning and stuff. But yeah, I like that AB side thing a lot. I think it's a really interesting decision space. And Peter, you had mentioned like the die rolling on the chart. So you have like these rows that have, with the fudge dice Peter mentioned, bonuses or penalties for your fighting that levels up as you level up. And what I loved here, this is just me and my randomness averseness in Gloomhaven. In Gloomhaven, you have a crit card and you have a miss card in your deck. So like you could do your best attack. And if you don't have advantage to draw two cards, you could completely miss with it. In this one, you always know what the row you're going to roll on has available, and only one row will ever have a miss. So if you're smart, you don't do your big, like, make or break, you know, like, lose the entire card super attack. When you're on the miss row, you do something else. So I did appreciate that little, I would call it an upgrade as well. I really like the card play here. I thought it was very interesting and fun. I mean, I always like the card play in Gloomhaven, but yeah, like you, Peter, I thought it was almost better here because, interestingly, they took things away and I felt like the tactics became more engaging with that.
Yeah. So my number two is the, you've mentioned a lot of these points, but I'm going to kind of throw them together in one big hodgepodge. It's the clever use of components. And like Mike said, as you complete a mission, you now have items and you can equip those items. You just put them under your character. They used a lot of cards multiple times. Instead of having 8 cards per class, you have 4 with an A and a B side. So I think they actually took the limitations of what they had and made it really cool. They did Mike's trick of using sticks and rocks as the enemies. They don't each have individual miniatures. I'm just joking. There are no sticks and rocks in the game, but they have different color cubes. Now, this is the one big for me.
Oh man, I wonder if it's the same one. Yeah, is it the freaking colors, the green and the blue?
Yeah,
dude,
green, blue, and purple.
Who thought that was a good idea?
Dude, there's 0% chance unless you, I mean, you just memorize green is number one. And so there are some negatives to it, right? Like when I see a green cube, I'm like, which enemy is that? And then I got to look on the little card on the board for this miniature tiny picture on it to like figure out, okay, green is that guy, but that guy corresponds to this card and this card. Wait, is that green or is that blue? Wait a minute. No, that's green. Like you do quickly figure out that green is one, but it is. Yeah. The colors.
And here's the thing. So yeah, what Peter and I are saying, like the enemies represented by cubes, and then they have life spinners that also have their color on them. Theoretically, that also have their color on them.
Yeah.
Because the cubes in my room's lighting, I could tell which cube was which. Like that part was absolutely okay. The spinners, Jesus God, like maybe
they do have a number, to be fair.
I don't know, also. Dude. I don't know what they were doing. Like if because like I appreciate when games try to have like colorblind friendliness and like sometimes they end up with colors that seem a little bit weird. I have never seen this. If this is like the colorblind friendly option for everything to be a different shade of like the same blue. So many times, man, like multiple times in different games, I would be like, oh yes, I'm finally gonna kill this guy. That's not even the guy. He's over there. And I don't know what the hell I'm attacking because that's not green. That's blue. Oh, so frustrating.
Yes. I will say the life spinners I thought were going to be a big con for me as well because they're kind of double-sided. And on one side, it's like 1 through 10 and the other side, it's 11 through 20. But they actually did it in a really clever way where there's a hole. Like, so when you get to 11 and then you go down, it goes to a hole on it. So basically it's like, hey, you need to flip it over. But what I didn't realize at first, but I did realize eventually, is if you keep spinning it in the same direction, so it's like, okay, I got 3 more life to take. I just kept spinning it in the same direction, and then I flipped it over, and it was correct. So that was actually really clever how they used that component. So while Life Spinner's color was terrible, and at first it felt really annoying to have to flip these things over, I do think, given limited components, what they had to work with, I do think that was really clever. And look, it's not their fault that whoever the printer was got the color that bad. Like, I'm sure in their prototypes, it was like very clear which color was which, but it was just bad saturation or whatever else with the printer. So that was a little bit frustrating. Kind of having to look up which monster was which was a little frustrating. After, like, you got used to it, but it's like, like there would be three different monsters that you were facing. Some had armor, some had retaliate. They were just very different, and you need to do different tactics against each one. And you really would have to take your time and figure out which one was near you and which one you wanted to do which tactic against, which made it very cool tactically. But that part got a little annoying. But overall, like with what they were given, with the small price point and the small amount of components, every component is really used to its maximum. And overall, this is a huge pro for me. It's called clever use of components, not the components are crappy. Yeah. So for a $20 game, like I know Buttonshy has these, you know, whatever 14 card games, 16 card games, whatever. I don't know if that's what was the genesis of a lot of the innovation that they used here for how to use these cards for so many things. But I really thought it was clever how much game and how much they could put in there in such a small number of components.
By the way, I was just skimming through the forums, and yeah, there's like a billion threads about like, why do these dials suck and why can't we tell what the colors are? There are cool solutions in there too. If people want to look on BoardGameGeek, like people putting stickers on them to make it more obvious or that kind of stuff. But yeah, minor thing. It's not one of my points. My number one is specifically the tactical movement and especially the enemy activation. I love this. And again, for me and my taste, I'm not saying this is going to be for everybody, but this is my preference when it comes to dungeon crawlers. And this is an upgrade for me in the Gloomhaven thing. So in Gloomhaven, Frosthaven, and Jaws of the Lion, you have these decks for enemies to activate. And I don't know what the hell are in those decks. All right. Like, I know if I played them over and over again and played like 50,000 times. I mean, I have played 50,000 times. I still don't know what's in those decks. But I'm sure there are Gloomhaven players out there who like know what every possibility of like the cultist deck is and what their initiative value possibilities are and how they might move. But, you know, when I'm trying to do something awesome in Gloomhaven and then like I flip a card that I didn't even know existed for that enemy type and suddenly their initiative is like way before me and they do something that totally jobs up the cool like combo I had planned, that's frustrating. So what they do in Buttons and Bugs is they have the same like kind of thing that Peter mentioned with the fudge dice. Each enemy type has a minus activation, a middle activation, a plus activation. So I know one third, like each of their activations, it has a one third chance of happening. So it's still pretty random which one they do, but I can see all those possibilities. There are three possibilities per enemy type. And I'd be like, all right, so if I play this card, I'm always going to be faster than them. Or, oh man, if I play this card, I have a two-thirds chance of them not even hitting me. That's going to be awesome. I feel like, for my taste, that improves the decision space, makes me feel more clever, makes it feel less random without me memorizing the enemy decks. And on top of that, I appreciate in a game that is all about the tactical combat that it is such a tight tactical puzzle. The enemies are moving on this very tiny board. It's a single card with some hexes. All the battles are in your face. You're fighting from the get-go. Again, to compare to Gloomhaven, Frosthaven, and many dungeon crawlers, not just the Haven series, there's no, oh, okay, I gotta like spend five turns moving to a door so that I can then like actually fight people again. There's never like that sort of awkward like downtime. You are just in a knife fight until everyone's dead or you're dead. Deal with it, you know, and I really like that. And like Peter said, there's lots of terrain effects. I just found this with my taste. I'm definitely not having time to do big campaign games as much anymore. I'm like, this is peak Gloomhaven, like tactical combat for me. I like it a lot.
Yeah. And a lot of what you were saying is in my number one as well, which is this game is just a puzzle. From start to finish, you are literally like, okay, this enemy I need to deal with this way because they've got really high armor and I don't want to just attack them normally. Maybe I can make them bleed. And as Mike said, run away as best I can and try to kite it around. This enemy has retaliation but low life, so maybe I try to kill it in one big hit, but I don't want to do that till the end because my only card that does a big hit gets discarded when I use it. So like, it's really trying to figure out that combination, that puzzle. And I do feel like it's puzzle. Now, the one con of this for me is those fudge dice do make a difference, like in a big way. And I feel like the puzzle is pretty tight. At least all the games I played past the first two missions were pretty easy. Every other mission I didn't ever lose. First of all, I feel like if I lost, I would have been very frustrated.
Oh, I lost. Like, I lost one mission three times in a row. I dialed one mission down to extra easy, Peter. I was so embarrassed.
Was it the arena one?
Yeah, dude, that one was hard as hell.
Dude, that was like the third or fourth mission. I'm like, I saw it when I put it out. I'm like, I didn't want to play this. Like, it is super hard, and I don't feel like I have the tools. Now, you have to do a lot of pushing and stuff like that to, like, because they all have high armor. Oh, that's the one I was talking about. The two of them have high armor, the other one has retaliate, right?
When the friggin', oh my god, that the roach that bleeds you, I was like, I gotta kite away from that guy or kill him ASAP. I finally won and moved on by killing him instead of running away the whole time, interestingly.
Yeah, no, I did end up beating it the first time I played, but it came down, and most of my games came down to, I have two cards in my hand, and if I don't take them out this turn, like, I'm out of cards. And in that mission specifically, I was down to one life. Most of the other missions, I have not gotten that hurt. I've gotten pretty hurt in all of them, but that one, I was definitely down to one life at the end, and I had two cards. And it was one of those situations where if I roll well here and I hit him, I'm going to be able to kill him.
Yeah.
And if not, I'm going to fail and lose the mission. Like, if I roll a minus here, like, forget it. And, you know, even if you have advantage, it can happen, right? Like, I've definitely rolled two minuses. I've definitely rolled two pluses with advantage. So, yeah. So it's a very puzzly game. And that's, I guess, going to lead right into my final thoughts. I really do feel like this is a game for Gloomhaven players who want something fast and portable, who want to play a puzzly where you're trying to figure out, okay, what's the best way to deal with this puzzle in front of me? I do feel like it's very puzzly, almost like some of those games where you, like, look at it online, like chess games even. Like, they're like, okay, how do you mate somebody in two moves, right? Like, I feel it's a lot of that. Now, there is some swinginess and some luck with the dice rolling, but of course, I do think that for the most part enhances the game. And every character you play, I think you're going to have to do different things within that puzzle. Certainly, there's going to be some similar things you're going to do. Like I said, that one mission, like, you got to figure out a way to do damage without using your normal attacks, because bleed damage goes through armor, traps go through armor. Like, there are certain skills you have that will help you with that. And if you kite them around and bleed them long enough, like, those things are going to work. So that, to me, was the cool part of the game. If you're looking for Gloomhaven solo, portable, and you're just looking to, like, okay, I got 20 minutes. I want to just do this cool Gloomhaven-y puzzle and pick a new character and figure out how it works or how to solve this. This is great for that. And I think people who like Gloomhaven a lot and just want a solo puzzle when their friends aren't there, waiting 20 minutes before their friends show up or whatever, I think it's great for that. I had fun playing through the campaign. I think, like Mike, the story's not great, but it's good enough. So yeah, I've enjoyed my plays of it. I don't know that I'd want to play it forever. I certainly, once I play through the campaign, I don't know I want to play through with every character. I probably want to play a couple missions with every character just to see how they feel different or whatever. Yeah, overall, I recommend. Look, for $20, you're not going to go wrong having this in your house. There are times where you're going to be sitting around looking for something to do for 20 minutes, and this is a great option for that. You know, it's like those mini puzzle games that you have on your phone or whatever. It's perfect for that kind of a situation.
Yep, I'm with Peter pretty much all the way. I don't really recommend this if you haven't played Gloomhaven before, though. Gloomhaven can do this. That's the funny thing. Like, most games, if they were like, hey, we made a smaller, like, little version of our game that's the exact same game and has all the same rules, and go read a tome online. You know, most games, you'd get a fraction of the original buyer base buying it, which I'm sure is what you're going to get for Buttons and Bugs, too. And that would be really bad for the game. But Gloomhaven has, like, millions of copies sold probably at this point. So who cares if they get a fraction of the buyer base? It's going to be more than enough. So yeah, I think this is a very weird game, but I like it a lot. Like I said, I prefer some things about the combat puzzle more than Gloomhaven. I do think it is overly tough at times. I do think that the way they did difficulty is kind of flawed, because the only way to officially moderate difficulty is to make the enemies deal less damage. But that's not going to be enough in scenarios like the one Peter was talking about, where really the problem is often not necessarily their damage. The problem is status effects. The problem is dealing enough damage to them before you run out of cards. So I don't know. It's a weird package. And I will say, if you didn't like Gloomhaven, oh my God, like, don't get this game. Like, the frustrating things about Gloomhaven, like, if you don't like that Gloomhaven weakens you as you go and you run out of options, that is even worse here. Like Peter said, like, you rest and you have six cards now instead of eight, basically. Like, you are running out of options quickly. So, but I really enjoyed it. I am in the group that has played every iteration of Gloomhaven. that knows the rules well, that likes the tactical puzzle here. And this really narrowed it down. Like, it got rid of all the like campaign trappings and like extraneous stuff and made the setup quicker. So I enjoyed it. But yeah, it's a weird recommend for a lot of people.
Let me ask you this. Is this the one version of Gloomhaven you would actually keep?
I mean, I still have Jaws of a Lion. But yes, between the two, I would probably keep this because I would actually play it. I haven't played. I taught my kids Jaws of a Lion a while back and did like two scenarios, and they were not feeling it. They wanted to play Tales from the Red Dragon Inn or Kinfire Chronicles or some other dungeon crawlers. They weren't feeling the Gloomhaven love.
Yeah, I do feel like it's an easy game to keep because it's so small. And when we say so small, like, I don't know, the size of maybe three decks of cards stacked on top of each other, that might be the size of it. So it's a tiny box. It's a tiny package. It doesn't require a lot of play space. And the playtime is so much quicker than any Gloomhaven scenario. That's why I feel like, now, you can't play it multiplayer. There are definitely some cons to it as well. But if I'm going to keep one, it's probably this one, maybe Jaws of the Lion. But it's, first of all, what are you going to get for it? $10 or something? And you're not really gaining space. So why would you get rid of it if you get it? But yeah, no, I feel like it's an easy keep in your collection for me. And if you like Gloomhaven, I don't know. I don't think diehards of Gloomhaven are going to love it because I don't know that the puzzles are that interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. If they crank it up to like very hard difficulty, I think it'd be hard as heck to win some of these more challenging scenarios. So I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think at least a recommend from both of us. I mean, it'll probably be there near the top by the end of the year. I certainly like it better than a lot of the stuff we played this year.
Yeah.
Not all of it.
I don't know where it's going to be for me. And again, if Peter just called it a recommend if you like Gloomhaven, which is very different than a recommend. You know what I mean? Like it's...
yes. Certainly not a recommend across the board for everybody. If you play Gloomhaven even once or twice, I think, and you enjoyed what you were doing,
yes,
I think you should try this out.
Yes.
Like,
and Peter said, it is nice. I mean, some people aren't going to like that the campaign is kind of like not a campaign. You can just jump wherever and like kind of do whatever. But it is nice that you can really, like, if you get to the arena scenario and have a bad time like I did, just skip to the next scenario. Nothing is going to happen. Like, the game barely cares that you did that, you know? Or if you realize the character class you're playing doesn't do that scenario well, it's like, whoops, I'm this person now, and I can go back to the next one because it doesn't matter. You're not, like, tracking.
Nothing carries over.
Yeah.
Literally nothing.
Yeah.
You don't get victory points. You don't get coins. You're not buying stuff between missions. Literally nothing. The next mission, it goes, okay, start with this and go.
Yep. All right.
Cool.
So that's Gloomhaven Buttons and Bugs. And let's talk about this whole micro sizing, or what do you call it?
Miniaturizing your game, micro sizing. I was kind of at first thinking like Tiny Epic, but not really, because those aren't smaller versions of any particular game. Those are just smaller versions of a genre of game.
Yeah.
So I think this is very specific. And, you know, people have done it with like the dice game or the card game or whatever, made a smaller, lighter version. And maybe we can throw those in. But I think this is pretty unique in the space where it really takes the game and most of the components of what the game is and really does just shrink it down and make it a more accessible, easier to set up, easier to get played in a short amount of time version of the game. And not many games do that and still give you the feel of the original game. And I think it does it actually really well.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is, if nothing else, it is a triumph and an achievement that you can basically feel like you're playing Gloomhaven in sorry, y'all can't see my hands, but it is like a 2 foot by 2 foot space or less, you know, or 1.5 foot by 1.5 foot.
Yeah. I mean, certainly it would have been cooler if they could have made it multiplayer somehow. I don't think they could have, though, and still achieved, you know, all the things they did here with the small size. Because when we say you're playing on cards, we mean a playing card is the board. Like, literally, the little hex map is on a playing card. So I don't know that they could have done that with multiple people. I think it would have been wonky dealing with, you know, different bosses and health and stuff like that. So no, I mean, I'm glad they made it solo only. They did a really good job. Now, obviously in this situation, we like it. Do we like it in all situations? I guess we haven't seen too much of this, but is it a good idea to do this to your game?
I mean, is it a good idea? I don't think it's the right question, because the only games that are going to be able to do this, I think, are ones that are already massively successful. You know what I mean? Yep. So the people that could consider doing this and have it be a feasible, like, economic thing, they can already decide that for themselves. But yeah, like other ones I've seen, Codenames has a, actually they gave this out at cons. They had like a little miniature deck. The cards are tiny compared to regular Codename cards. And it's like a very limited subset of Codenames. And there it had a different purpose. It's not buttons and bugs, like giving you like a portable version of it. I mean, it is a portable version, but it's really like a con or like a stocking stuffer item. But, you know, it's printing like 40 miniature cards. I'm sure it cost them a tiny bit to get a ton of them. So that's kind of a cool thing. Like if you can have a version of your game or even like a single... I'm also thinking of like Roll and Write. I could see this being valuable for like if you have like a little... a teaser version of your game. Like, hey, here's a single level. Like, this is not quite the same. This is a print and play and not a miniaturization. But remember how the Super Skill Pinball had like the first stage freely available on websites. You can like print that out if you wanted to try out the system before you like invested in getting the full set with like the components and the four things. That's, I don't know if that's a totally different topic, sorry, but...
Well, that's, I think that is, it's not miniaturizing your game, but what it's doing is taking the, you know, the beginning of the game, like almost like a tutorial scenario or an intro scenario and giving it away for free for people to try. And I do think that is one of the benefits of miniaturizing your game. Look, there might be people who are new to the Gloomhaven system who go, hey, for $20, I will try this buttons and bugs. And if they can fight through the rules and the learning curve, which again, I still think you can play the first couple scenarios out of the mini rule book. And then if you're enjoying that, people I do think would be willing to go online. I mean, part of the problem is if they had a full-size rule book in there, it wouldn't fit in the box, right? Now you don't have this miniature thing anymore. And certainly if you want to print out the rules, that's a problem with that as well, right? You almost have to have a computer by you or whatever else to look stuff up as you're playing. I certainly did. Yeah, so I think it's good for an introduction. Now, that's not what they were doing here. I think they were just trying to find more ways for people to get Gloomhaven in front of themselves more often. You know, they got the digital version. They got a lot of different versions. But I think this is a good way for people to not forget Gloomhaven and maybe get the full game to the table more often. Because it's almost like you get a taste of it, but then you're like, man, I want to play the full version now. So I think... there is some marketing advantage to it, but I totally agree that you need to have a successful game in order to even, because you're getting a fraction of the sales, as you pointed out earlier. So like getting a fraction of the sales of a game that sold 1,000 copies is not going to be good enough.
Yeah. Now it is interesting. You mentioned like it did make me want to bust out Jaws of the Lion. Cause I was like, oh man, it'd be cool to see like a bigger character class that changes more over time, you know?
Right.
Yeah, it's hard to think of miniaturized things. I'm thinking of lots of things that are like demo versions that are technically smaller. And a lot of them are at cons, like they're for advertising. Like, you know, Pocket Paragons or the new version of Exceed, the one, the Guilty Gear one that just delivered, and some other fighting games. I've seen them do like two fighter tiny sets, like just like in a single like little tiny box, you know, or just like in a plastic sleeve, and like that way you only have that one matchup. It's only like 20 cards. You might need to download the rules off a QR code, but it again gives you that taste of the game. So if that's what we think Buttons and Bugs is doing too, like giving you a taste of the game so that you can have it in front of you more and maybe be more likely to go buy the other things, I guess it still could be a form of advertising in the end.
Well, let's think of it this way then. If Gloomhaven didn't exist, would we go out and buy Buttons and Bugs, not Gloomhaven Buttons and Bugs, just Buttons and Bugs as a game? Would you buy it and be satisfied with that as a game if there was no Gloomhaven?
Would it still not have a rule book in the box?
Right. Yeah. Everything the same.
No, man.
Okay. So we do think then it is probably meant to be an advertisement, right?
Or, well, if not an advertisement, another form factor to play a game you already love. That doesn't have to be an advertisement, right?
Right. But so these miniaturizations, maybe they could in the future be their own standalone thing. But we think, at least in this case, that it isn't like a standalone. It is more of a thing to get you excited about Gloomhaven or a reason to play Gloomhaven more often.
You know, I've seen these kind of things for other things. Like, I remember Battlestar Galactica had, like, a fan-made sort of, like, miniature, like, light version that still maintained a lot of, like, the core rules. It I will say this, Buttons and Bugs as a solo only game is more attractive to me in a miniature version than games that are supposed to be multiplayer experiences. Because as much as I don't love giant games that I can barely fit on my table, game presence and like kind of how that presence contributes to the shared experience of a game has value, you know? And like if I put Gloomhaven Buttons and Bugs on a table with other people and they were all trying to squint and reach this tiny like movement card.
Well, you know what sure. I mean? Yep. Like, yeah.
Like, yeah, I think miniaturization lends itself to solo. And you see like all these tiny PNP and all these button shy games that are like solo only. And there's no problem because it's like what we talked about with like Seven Citadel, you know? There's a big difference between Peter by himself staring at like a card for 20 minutes because he has the time and who cares and he wants to like understand what's going on with this and trying to like get everyone to see that tiny little card and to get everyone to like read the text on that thing. So, yeah, miniaturization to me seems like it is ideal for solo and maybe presents extra challenges for multiplayer. Unless it's something like Code Names where like who cares? You know, it's just like a little party game. It doesn't have much form factor and like attractiveness and table presence to begin with.
Sure. Well, let's talk about our experience because we did try to do this for Flame and Fang. We did try to make a solo. It was a roll and write. I mean, honestly, there were some really great things about that game. And even at times I was like, oh, I even like playing this better than the main game. But then you quickly realize it's because it's something different, not necessarily because it's like actually better than the main game, but it was just a different experience. Now, we never released that because we never got it exactly where, I mean, it was really close. Like, it definitely was very playable. It was very fun. But we did run into some challenges as well. You would think miniaturizing a game would be easier in some respects, and it certainly is because you have the core of like at least the objective of what you want to do, and you kind of have the idea of a core action system and how you want that to work. But our goal for that was to release it as like a $5 add-on to the campaign, and who knows, maybe this is how Flame and Fang gets re-released when everybody starts playing it and raving about it and going, oh wow, this is a freaking great game, and everybody else who missed out on it is like, wait, I can't get a copy of it. And it's like, no, you can't, we told you, pledge now, like for how many months? So the bottom line is when we release it, you can't release the exact same campaign again. So maybe it does end up being this roll and write that will be the difference. But the thought for us was almost that, was almost not only advertising the main game, but also giving you a way to play the game while you're waiting for it to deliver. For those 2 or 3 months while you're waiting, it kind of almost builds the froth up. Like, oh man, I'm playing this game and like, oh, this is really fun. I really like this. I can't wait to see how it works differently in this other version of the game. So what was your experience with trying to work on a roll and write version, like, or a smaller version that was never meant to be a full game in and of itself of one of our games?
Yeah, I mean, what we did was try to keep some core aspects of the game and see which ones would like translate to a roll and write format, which again is not really what Buttons and Bugs did. Buttons and Bugs, if you take away the like rolling for enemy activation and rolling for hitting and the AB side, besides that, it's Gloomhaven, right? Like,
well, sure.
It's 95% of the rules from Gloomhaven. But this one, yeah, it was almost like an adaptation of a game, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So it's not quite the same process, but it reminded me a bit of like when we were working on our Mega Man game, Mega Man Adventures, where it's like, how can I preserve the feel of this or represent this element, but okay, now it's in a different genre, it's in a different medium. Now, clearly it's a much smaller jump from big board game to smaller board game with roll and write mechanics than it is from like movie or video game to board game. That's an entirely larger leap. But, you know, looking at what has to be preserved, a good question for any adaptation, and I think this also applies for miniaturizing, like, what is the actual core of this? Like, if yeah. players aren't doing X, if the players don't feel Y, is this the same thing anymore? Like, for example, if Gloomhaven Buttons and Bugs had not had top action, bottom action, like initiative, like that kind of core mechanic, would it be a Gloomhaven game? Would it be Founders of Gloomhaven all of a sudden instead of like, you know, the Gloomhaven right. dungeon crawler? And same thing. So for us, for Flame and Fang with this roll and write, we were like, all right, so you need to have the thing where you pick one aspect to turn and like you use like things for that aspect. and you need to have like ways to level up, and you need to be moving around this map. You need to have different scenarios. You need to have like objectives. You need to have like sort of a story where things change during the scenario and all those things. Like, you know, again, the game's not 100% there, which is why we didn't offer it yet, but all those things we managed to keep. But other things, it's like, ah, who cares? And sort of like Buttons and Bugs, it was cool to see, as Peter said, that we found some mechanics that were kind of neat on their own, you know, and did their own thing that was very different and almost made us think differently about the main flame and fang. Like, I know some of the effects we came up with for the Roll and Write were things we were like, oh, maybe that could be like an expansion for Flame and Fang, like its own version of it. So that's a cool thing where it becomes a conversation. Not that I expect, you know, what's after Gloomhaven and Frosthaven? Firehaven. Not that I expect Firehaven to have A and B cards, but it could. One class could, and let's see what happens. You know what I mean? Like, so it is,
sure.
It is interesting to see how you are informed both ways and things can influence each other, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I did. I learned a lot more about the design of Flame and Fang itself and about some cool tricks that we hadn't even thought of. Oh, we can make enemies do this, or oh, we can have the board do this. I do think that the problem some of these smaller games are going to have, and you're right, it was going to be solo for us too, by the way. So it's going to be like a solo roll and write, which is what Gloomhaven did. I think a lot of these miniaturizations do work better as solo. But the other thing I think we ran into is it was fun to play once, twice, but how do you put replay in something like that? And I think Gloomhaven Buttons and Bugs did it by giving you all these different classes to choose from. Like, I don't know that I'd run through the campaign with the same class over and over again. Would I want to try a different class? Absolutely. So I do think because it's like a puzzle that's put in front of you, I think replay becomes harder with some of these miniaturizations. Like, how would you add replay into something like Gloomhaven Buttons and Bugs? If you had to play the same character class every time, what would you do for variety?
I mean, I think what they did is, I mean, certainly it's become my preferred way. Like, this is a different thing. It's not miniaturization at all, but just to talk about variety for a second, because I know they had like that big article about variety on BGG, like the video and stuff. I definitely am leaning toward more variety in what I do being better even than like variety in the scenario or the boss or that kind of thing. So I like the way Buttons and Bugs did it, where the scenarios do change. Peter and I both found the scenario variety pretty solid with like the different tactical puzzles in front of you, the different enemies. But the idea that I could play Buttons and Bugs again and try the Spell Weaver and be totally like doing different stuff than I did as the other guy, or that I could play Spirit Island against, I could play the exact same opponents and just keep on changing spirits in Spirit Island, and I think I would have an awesome time.
Yeah, but even then, if you played the same spirit over and over, I feel like you'd have an awesome time because the way the enemies come out is going to be different.
Well, true.
I mean, like, there's a lot.
Spirit Island is a bad example because that is an excellent game with a lot of variety play to play and tons of ways to like toggle things.
Well, because I'm even thinking of Marvel Champions, which I love, and I play the same scenario with the same hero, and it feels different because the order of the cards comes out differently. Here, though, literally, they have one of three actions, so sure, their actions can change from turn to turn, but where they start, what they're near at the beginning of the game, there's not that much difference in what they're going to do, but I do feel like there's a huge variety in what you do based on which character class you have.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I do worry about replayability of something that's miniaturized because again, when you have a limited number of components, there's only so much you can do. Like you can't add in a whole new set of cards or it's not 60 cards you're drawing from to determine what this enemy does and how they act differently than they did the last time you played it. So I do think that might be one of the limitations of the miniaturization is like if this game came on Board Game Arena or became a digital adaptation, I don't know that I'd want to play it 100 times.
Yes, but it's also going to be $15 or less in online shops.
Well, sure.
Yeah. So the whole calculus is completely different. And like you said, I might just keep this on my shelves forever because I can play it in 20 minutes. And if I'm not playing a game more than once a month, that also changes the entire calculation. Like, what? Replay? Yep. I can play the same scenario with the exact same class, not remember how it went because I'm getting older, and be like, yep, that was fun again, you know?
That's true. Absolutely. Yeah. No. So I think that's some pros and cons of miniaturizing your game. I do think we probably, or at least for now, have come to the conclusion that it's probably best for advertising your bigger version of the game, whether it's a free thing you give away at a convention or something you're selling very cheap, just to get loyal fans of the game to want to play the main game more often, kind of jones into play it. So at least that's our take. But come over to the Discord. There's a podcast channel there and let us know your thoughts.
Yep. And thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you in a couple weeks with what are we going to do, Peter?
Oh, we might do Slay the Spire next.
Yeah, we got Slay the Spire. I just got Leviathan Wilds, which I know Peter and I have enjoyed. Remember that one, the climbing up the dudes, Stab of the Crystals?
Yep. Yep. You liked it better than I did.
Okay.
Well, then we can do liked it okay. Yeah. Well, Steve liked that a lot.
Yes.
You and Steve love that game.
I will certainly have a video of that one and then probably something for Slay the Spire. Lots of good stuff arriving right now. Too much good stuff arriving right now, so... We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, no, I'm excited about Slay the Spire. I played it on TTS back when they had a TTS demo free, and that was a lot of fun. Jerry and I played it several times, even though it was like just, you know, an intro scenario to the game. So I'm super excited about playing it more often. In fact, so much so that I pledged it myself. This wasn't a review copy, so I'm super excited to play some more of that one because it was really good.
All right, so that'll be coming up.
All right, well, we will see you in 2 weeks. Bye. Waving does not tell them.
I can't forget we're not recording the video.
Say bye, Mike.
Bye.
You're supposed to say bye, Mike.
Bye, Mike.
Thanks for joining us again for the One Stop Co-op Shop podcast. Check out our YouTube channel at One Stop Co-op Shop. Also, join us for games and discussion on our Discord channel. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/onestop or leave us a review on iTunes. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week for another top five list. Hey, Mike.
Yeah.
Honey, I Shrunk the Gloomhaven?
I'll get Rick Moranis back. I miss that guy.
Aw, why do you have to make it sad?
I mean, he's fine. He's not dead. He's just not acting anymore.
I know, but I miss him too. Now I want to see Ghostbusters.